John Bissett is here coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. He's the guy who writes that workbench column for Radio World. Well, he's joining Chris Tobin and me right here to talk about re-aiming that satellite dish, and you better get it done, or else you might have a big surprise, and then you won't have your satellite shows at all. Plus, plenty of tips from the master of the workbench, John Bissett. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Direct Current Broadcast e-newsletter. Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday with technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. By BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, where the April Virtual Roadshow is happening now. And by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. Love doing the show. I always look forward to Thursdays. Thursdays when we have the show. Once in a while we don't. I'm so sad. The show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And we're going to talk at least for a minute sometime this week about this book right here. Where Have All the Broadcasters Gone? By Charles B. Persons. Get my finger out of the way. There you go. Because I got a really cool announcement about the about this book. That'll be coming up. I work for the Telos Alliance. That's my full-time job, and I'm part owner of some radio stations in Mississippi and American Samoa. I own the part that doesn't make any money, which is why I work full-time for Telos, and I'm just delighted to do that. So if we do talk about Telos products and technologies that Telos is using on this show, if you notice a little bit of bias, yeah, because I know something about that. But I really try to give fair exposure to other brands and technologies as well. And so we have representatives from different manufacturers on the show and even some competitors from time to time. So that's what we're all about. We're all about educating engineers and broadcasters as to the technologies that are applicable today. And once in a while, we delve back into some history. All right. Let's enough about me. Let's run over to somewhere in the metropolitan New York City area and our favorite co-host, Chris Tobin. Chris, welcome in, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well, Kirk. I'm actually at a location, an engineering firm called DSI RF Systems here in New Jersey. It's Somerset County, I guess, is the best landmark to give you. So it's DSI RF Systems, and behind me happens to be just an inanimate object, but known as a duck bot. but one of the engineering firm also has a nonprofit foundation that they started, the family did anyway. It's called the Bees Foundation, so that's the reason for the duck. It's part of the duck race they do every year for raising money. And the Bees Foundation is actually, they raise money and public awareness for pediatric brain cancer. The owner's daughter suffered from that and passed at 22 years of age. So for many years now, they've been raising funds for people like Sloan Kettering and a few other places. So it's part of the reason why there's a duck behind me, just as the public awareness of pediatric brain cancer. So the Bees Foundation is what they work on. That's the nonprofit side of the organization. And so I'm at DSIRF, and behind me is some stuff. You see, the trucks load up all kinds of gear. They do RF systems for broadcast, radio and TV, tower work. Let me see if I can make this work right. And on the other side of the shop where I'm standing, see if this works. Of course, it's going to not work for me now. Here we go. Turn the camera a bit. That, see, now that looks like a workshop, huh? We're in the warehouse.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And just to make sure we're in a warehouse, it wouldn't be complete without a fork truck.
Racks. Fork.
There you go.
And pallets.
And pallets and racks.
And
on
a big
pallets.
Door, a big garage door.
Garage door for the trucks. Those racks are being loaded up for a project for a broadcaster in New York City. It involves lots of fiber and RF. And there's about a half a dozen of those racks that are being lined up and going out. So we'll come back to me, I think. Let's see if I get this right. And there we go. So that's part of what they do. That's down here. This is downstairs in the warehouse. Upstairs where the engineering folks are and all the design work and the plotters are printing and schematics are being drawn and crazy stuff going on. So I just thought it'd be fun to be out here today.
Awesome. Awesome. Chris, I'm always delighted when you can join us, and you most usually do, and you're always at some interesting place. And you're always using OPB, other people's bandwidth, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. But I do travel with my little handy data modem, just in case I can't use other people's bandwidth.
You carry that when you have to, or when you can.
So I do ask for permission. I say, I could use mine, or may I use yours? And they say, use ours. Go ahead. mine. I don't just walk in and assume I'm going to use it. I walk in with, I have mine, but if you don't mind, I'd like to use yours. It's more reliable. It's wired.
You know, the cost of internet is pretty de minimis. I mean, if you went in and said, yes, I'd like to do my show here, and it's going to require long-distance calls on four ISDN lines, four B channels. Is that okay? Well, that sounds like about $70 an hour right there. So it's fun. Hey, that other voice laughing. I got to bring him in right away. This is going to be a fun show. John Bissett is my colleague at work, but we all know and love him from the Radio World Workbench column. John, welcome in.
Thank you, Kirk. Thank you so much. Good to be here with you guys today. Chris, really neat to see DSI.
Yes, yes.
So tell you what, we got a sponsor right off the bat here. We're going to take a quick break for that. We'll reintroduce John Bissett. And John is, John being the author of the Workbench column, John is hands-on. And he's not just hands-on himself. He talks to other people who are hands-on. So John is able to bring an enormous amount of practical information to us as broadcast engineers. And that's why I love having John Bissett on the show. So, I mean, between Chris and John, hey, I learned how to do my job. It's great. It's like a free education. Makes me look so smart. Yes, I know exactly how to do that because I heard John and Chris talking about it. So it's a good show. So hang on, everybody. Our show is brought to you in part by my friends at the Telos Alliance, and they do something that they really put a lot of work into this, and that's the Direct Current weekly e-newsletter on Thursdays. I really encourage you, if you haven't signed up for it, what's wrong with you? Sign up for it. Here's a little message about Direct Current.
Not much in the paper today, is there?
Not much. Seems tough to stay informed, you know?
Like we're missing out on stuff, important stuff.
Yeah, feels like week-old news, yesterday's stories. Half the tech stuff in here seems out of date by the time I see it.
What Kirk doesn't know is I'm way ahead of everyone else around here. Every Thursday, I get this newsletter in my email. It's Direct Current. The folks at the Telos Alliance publish this.
What Joe doesn't know is I keep one step ahead of the radio guys in this market. Every Thursday, I get Direct Current from the folks at the Telos Alliance. It's a free newsletter about radio engineering, audio, streaming, studios, everything.
Thursday afternoons, we have our department head meeting. I look like a genius, thanks to the knowledge, updates, and advice in Direct Current. Sometimes I wonder if I should tell Kirk about Direct Current. Might help him out.
I wonder if I should let Joe in on my secret. He could use a little help sometimes.
Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday. Read profiles of engineers and newsmakers in the broadcast community. Get technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. Important industry news and views. Plus, you'll be up to date on Telos Omnia Axia and ZipString products. It's all here in the Direct Current newsletter. Subscribe online at telosalliance.com/directcurrent. That's telosalliance.com/directcurrent.
If you're not signed up, do it. Do it. Telosalliance.com/directcurrent, and you're going to enjoy it. In fact, this week is featured a blog post by Jeff McGinley, one of our own staff support engineers. And Jeff is a networking genius, and sometimes you need that kind of. In fact, real quick, whenever I'm setting up a new studio, a new Axia Livewire studio, you know what I do? I don't bother to program the switch myself. I hook the switch. The Cisco switch that needs to be programmed, needs to be configured. I just hook it up to a computer, and then I call my buddy Jeff McGinley. Hey, Jeff, it's Kirk. It's time to configure another switch. You can do that, right? and he's in there and out of there, I mean, like in 3 minutes, and bam, I'm done. Saved, configuration's good, and don't have to worry about that again. So just a little tidbit of advice. If you're setting up a new AOIP studio, if it's Axia, then contact support at axiaaudio.com and let them do that work for you. That way you won't make the mistake. All right. Hey, welcome back. This is This Week in Radio Tech, our 343rd episode. John Bissett is our guest. John, issue after issue after issue of Radio World Magazine, there is a workbench column in there. And we're going to talk about some of these topics if folks haven't had a chance to go in and read some themselves. And one of them that I'm really interested in, Chris and I have touched on this a few times, is this satellite dish re-aiming thing that we're told we're going to have to do. You have some ideas about that, don't you?
I sure do. Yes, absolutely. And a little bit of history here on this. AMC 18 is the new dish direction you're going to be wanting to aim to, the new satellite you want to aim to. And that's at 105 degrees west longitude. It covers North and South America. Right now, service is on AMC 8, and that's going to be ending at the end of June, June 30th. AMC 8 is 139 degrees west longitude.
Yeah. John, it's worth pointing out that if you were on AMC 8, which is kind of like over Hawaii, if you were on AMC 8 and you could look in at every dish that was pointed at you, right? A whole lot of those would be radio stations. In fact, if you want to find radio stations in the USA, do that. Go get up on AMC 8, get you a long telescope, and look at all the dishes that are pointing at you, and there you'd will be amazed. Radio stations. Yeah, exactly. But they're and you know what? For years, people complained about AMC 8, especially if you're on the east coast of the U.S., because it's so low in the sky that it's a little bit difficult to aim at if you're in an urban environment, if you've got trees. I mean, some people had to knock down stuff or put their satellite dish out of the tower site or put the satellite dish on the roof where it was above obstructions. And they're moving to a satellite that is a clear shot for most folks, except for one thing. If you chose your site carefully to look way down low into the southwest at AMC 8, you better check and see what's in the way if you crank that dish around and point it, south and up, right?
That's it, absolutely. And to facilitate transition to this, Kirk, the networks have programmed a fallback channel or fallback carrier into the table of each receiver. And what this will allow is when you aim to the new satellite dish or the new satellite, whether it's XDS or Wegner, to find the correct new carrier on AMC 8, the receiver will lose lock on the old signal, and then when you point it to the new one, it will alternately research and find the new frequency for that network until it locks up to one. And it'll take anywhere from maybe 30 seconds to 2 minutes. Now, I should point out, if anyone's using Calypso receivers, they do not have this fallback carrier table on them, and they must be set by changing the frequency on the front panel.
So, you know, a lot of folks have the XDS receiver since, correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm just going by memory, Premier Radio Network uses XDS, and so does Cumulus, and maybe others too. Is there, without breaking out the manual, okay, I guess I could do that, is there any kind of voltage or any easy way to help me make sure I'm tuned to the right thing?
Yeah, in fact, we'll talk about that. One of the things I wanted to chat with you guys this afternoon about, tell the viewers, is looking at some criteria that you've got to evaluate before changing your dish or re-aiming it. If your affiliate downlink dish is in too poor condition to be repointed, and that means rusted hardware or it's not 2-degree compliant, and the 2-degree compliance means that it enables the downlinks to reject satellite signals from either side of the main signal that you're trying to receive. You're going to be strongly urged to replace it with either a new it probably will be a new one. You're not going to find anything used that will work, 3.7 meter or larger dish. So that's, I guess, the biggest concern about this now. Is if you're going to have to replace a dish, you can't be doing this like the 15th of June and expect you're going to be done by the 30th.
Okay. So you may very well encounter a problem that's going to require buying something in order, getting a truck with a satellite dish on it to come into your facility. Check it out now. You know, you may want to even mark yourself. Well, if you're going to do all this, you may as well re-aim it, but if you want to check and see if you're rusted badly, you could go mark your satellite dish in a couple of, you know, for azimuth and elevation, and then loosen it up and see if it'll move. Yeah. And then you can put it back,
there you go.
You know, like it was.
Absolutely. And here's the best thing to use. This is a Tello Sharpie. And these little Sharpies work real well for marking the locations of where you have the nuts aligned and the azimuth adjustments on the dish itself if you're going to go ahead and move it. But I would caution you, if you've got rusted hardware, I wouldn't take a chance.
Gotcha. Chris Tobin, have you been involved yet in some dish moves in your area?
No, not yet. But the folks here at DSIRF have been, and they've been telling me some interesting stories. And John's correct. If you've got rusted parts, do not attempt to loosen them. Don't do WD-40 and the other stuff that's out there for breaking down the rust. They told me they had one location where it was two radio stations, two dishes across two different properties, and one of the guys decided to try and crack the rust, if you will, and that sheared the bolt off, and the dish went from its position at 10 degrees above the horizon, AMC 8, to a position looking to the blue sky. So, the bolt broke, and the weight of the dish just went right up. So, as determined in the satellite world, is blue skying the dish, which is basically pointing it straight up to avoid interfering with other satellites. They're doing a great job. So now they're basically a radio telescope for, something out there in distance. John is absolutely right. If you see rust, and there are some of the older dishes, the metals, the galvanizing didn't survive. Don't do it. Just look into getting a new one. And make sure it's 2-degree compliant. Remember, a lot of us, the broadcasters, the radio network neighborhood satellites of the old days of Scientific Atlanta and Comtech and Fairchild, and remember those receivers, DATs and CDAT? They weren't 2-degree compliant back then. But a lot of folks found modification kits, found ways to make it work, and it was great. But today's satellites and transponder power and digital carriers do not play well with non 2-degree compliant dishes.
Well, now I've got a question about that, and I think I know the answer, but let me make sure. For years, I've been told that we had to have a 2-degree compliant dish for AMC 8. That's what everybody said. And remember when you had the original Scientific Atlanta dish, and then you had to add pedals to it, add extensions to the pedals, and some people said, well, yeah, those really don't work all that well. I mean, they make the dish bigger, but that you can't. They don't really maintain the tight parabolic curve nature. You really need a solid dish. At the worst, one with two bolt-on wings that was made as a solid dish and then sliced. You need a dish that really is high performance. And yet, for years, we've been picking up AMC-8 adequately. I don't know how much margin I've got. I've got plenty of receivers that have an EBNO figure. It's a figure of merit on the order of 13, 14, 15 dB EBNO, EB over noise. So if I had to have 2-degree compliant for AMC-8, why are you bothering so much me about 2-degree compliance on AMC-18? Either one of you.
Go ahead, John. You go for that.
From what I understood, the spacing was not the same as it is with this new satellite. So there were not adjacent carriers that were going to cause as much interference. It's a whole nother story now with the new AMC satellite. So I don't know, Chris, can you add anything more to that?
Yeah. Yes. Basically, what's happened over time, the neighborhood has gotten crowded. So back in the day when we were all doing our radio network distribution, when I worked at CBS and ABC, it was very rural, if you can think of it that way. So you had this long road, which was from the satellite transponder to the dishes of our affiliates. So a nice long road and a few houses, parsed along the way. Over time, condos popped up, co-ops, new developments, and all of a sudden, the distance between us and them got very crowded. So in the simplest terms, that's what's happened. And now you have to remember you have KU, KA, C-band, all kinds of activity, and a lot of these satellites, spacecraft, are hybrids. So now they accommodate not just the radio network neighborhood, but other services that are outside of broadcast or in broadcast. And now the 2-degree compliance is even more important. It's been there for years. It's nothing new. It just happened to be, as John pointed out, AMC 8 just happened to be so far off at the arc, it wasn't usable for most high bandwidth, if you'll say video, carriers and stuff to do reliable things on a more ad hoc mobile environment. moved closer to the center of the arc, which is what you're doing now, and that's mm-hmm. where the prime real estate is. That's where everybody wants to be, to up and down and do everything around town. So the 2 degrees is even more important. And since we're doing radio distribution, the networks is all downlink only, you'll get clobbered real easy because you're trying to break something through in the center. If you talk to guys who do like Flight 9 services that do a lot of microwave satellite uplinking for broadcasters, they'll tell you horror stories trying to get their satellite signal up and uplink in the proper spot, because 2 degrees is, you know, we hear it in 24,000 miles up. It's like, hey, look, it's off by about a half a mile. That's a big difference. And you're talking on somebody else's transponder at that point. So that's what's really happened. That's why we got away with it. So it's not something just happened overnight and all of a sudden the FCC and the mobile radio services branch said, oh yeah, 2 degrees compliant. You now have to be that way because that's a new rule. No, it's just been around. And we have been very fortunate to be on the end of the arc. So now times have changed.
So it's a crowded neighborhood, and that precision, not only accuracy, but that precision of a 2 degree compliant dish really is important. Is there any way that a mesh dish works on this? Or if you've got a mesh dish, you really need to plan on replacing it.
I've heard stories.
My understanding is that's what you're going to need to do.
You have to replace it. I mean, I've heard stories of people with mesh dishes at C-band being very successful, and things worked. The signal, the EBNO signal strength, everything else was just perfect. I know in the places I've worked where we've had some mesh dishes, they were not. I looked at the spectrum on a spectrum analyzer. It was just barely, making it above the threshold for the receivers. It just so happened the receivers were working really well. The error correction was working overtime. And again, the neighborhood wasn't very crowded, so the noise flow was low and everything sort of worked in a positive way. But the physics of mesh dishes, everything about it just doesn't work for mission-critical broadcast. Home TVRO, you want to watch TV programs and that sort of stuff, that's great because most of those receivers have AGC and compensation for all kinds of things going on in the signal. Broadcast live radio, it's a little different.
So how about if I'm – okay, let's say my dish moves, no problem. I can re-aim it. And it may have even been a while since I've aimed a dish. It seems like we did a lot of this back some years ago, but I haven't. I guess it's been 3 years since I've aimed a couple of different dishes, and I was able to find AMC-8 okay. But now I'm looking for a bird in a little more crowded part of the sky. What about the what you might call it, the skew of the LNB? Do I need to adjust that? I'm guessing the answer is yes, and a spectrum analyzer
absolutely
would be the best way to do it. Yeah,
that's right. And Kirk, also another consideration, even before you start adjusting the dish, is to make sure that you are your new alignment, look angle, and bore sight path clearance is free. As you were talking, I guess it was Chris was talking a few minutes ago about the trees being in the way or buildings being in the way or whatever. You're going to want to make sure that those things are not, when you're swinging this dish around, that those things are not going to be in the way of what you're trying to aim for. Another thing is when you're going to be doing this, I think it's safe to say for most of the country that after snows are over, but we had an April 1st snowfall, 12 inches up here in New Hampshire, just a few days ago. So probably going to take a little longer for folks up here to do it, but it'll be a little easier for you if you wait till the weather is a little bit better, so you're not out there freezing to death trying to make all of this happen.
Gotcha. Whenever I would install a satellite dish, I always made a connection at the back of the dish. Usually, I would take the cable from the LNB and dress it to the back of the dish. And I'd loop a few feet of the cable. Typically, it's RG6 cable. And I would cut it there and put an F connector on. And then I would get one of those F barrels, typically one that I could screw onto some part of the dish, as a bit of a ground path.
Ground, and, exactly.
Yeah, and then bring in the cable either from underground or from overhead if it was near the building. And so anyway, I had a place I could break the connection so I could bring a satellite receiver outside, out to the dish, and be right there with it when I'm trying to pick it up. Now, honestly, I haven't had a working spectrum analyzer in a few years because I don't do contract engineering full time anymore. So I've been able, maybe just lucky, kind of knowing where the satellite is, knowing what to look for. But I've been able to find it within a few minutes each time. I just wonder, from a practical point of view, am I going to be able to find this satellite within a few minutes? Or am I really, really going to have to get a spectrum analyzer to help me out here? And if I do have a spectrum analyzer, I kind of got to know what the what I'm looking for in terms of the signature of the transponders that are on or off on that bird. Any advice for, you know, for initially finding this thing?
A couple of things. Yeah. One of the things that was suggested, Mike McCarthy, who's a contract engineer up in Chicago, submitted a bunch of information for the Workbench article on satellites. And what he did was he picked up a surplus StarGuide 3 from eBay, and he set this up on his Workbench, made sure that it worked, had audio going out of it and into a little amplifier, and he did that to make sure that the receiver wasn't dead itself. And then went out with the StarGuide and plugged that into the splice that you were talking about. And if you don't have one, that is certainly, it's called a service splice. And it certainly is something that you should add because it'll sure make your life a lot easier. So you go out there and plug into the dish at that point with the AC power and the coax jumper and any RF attenuators that you might need, as along with the headphones and the amplifier, and away you go. You go ahead and line the thing up, and you should be fine. There is a website that might be helpful too, Kirk. It's called dishpointer.com, and this is a really neat website that gives you a lot of information on which satellite you're trying to reach and what you're going to see and so forth.
Oh, yes, I have used this before, and yes, it was quite good. I would love to get some recommendations on Android or iPhone apps that help you, too. I've downloaded a couple of them that were not the best. One that was supposed to superimpose the satellite, you know, if you held the nighttime sky thing from Google, you hold this phone up to the sky, and it'll show you where the birds you're looking for are. But I found that one to be really jittery, and you've got to have good clean compass readings wherever you're at in order for that to work well. And I think one of our buildings is a metal building, and the compass in the phone was pretty jittery. And then I've used an app that showed you you could look for a landmark to point the dish over, at least get the azimuth fairly correct. And I had an app that, I got to tell you, it was wrong, wrong, wrong. I did the same thing, I think it was on Dish Pointer, and the difference was like 20 degrees in the Dish Pointer website was the correct one. I don't know what was wrong with it. Well, maybe it was the same. Maybe it was the same compass reading problem. I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. And I think it's really important that we keep coming back to this, that you give yourself time. You don't want to be waiting until the 1st of June to deal with this. Presuming that you've got a clear bore sight and that path is clear, you go ahead and aim away, and then you want to adjust the polarization offset for the best EBNO and AGC realized on the receiver, and adding any attenuation that you might need. I wanted to touch base real quick on the EBNO and just exactly what that is for people that may not know. This stands for energy per bit to noise power spectral density ratio. And it's a figure that is given without respect to bandwidth or modulation that basically tells you it's a normalized signal to noise ratio. And you want as good a signal as you possibly can. So when you're measuring that off of the receiver, that's something that you're going to want to be looking for.
Gotcha. That EBNO figure, yeah, I remember that was a new figure of merit. And I did some research on that. But it's energy per bit over noise. So this tells you how well am I receiving the bits versus noise. And this figure will be degraded by all kinds of things that you don't want. And one of those would be, energy from cross-polarized transponders. As we know, that's how they fit twice as many transponders on. Some are horizontal and some are vertical. And by the way, that's not horizontal and vertical with respect to the ground where you're standing on. That's horizontal and vertical with respect to, the satellite's view of the world.
of the world. Exactly.
Yeah. So that don't think you can just set it. Oh, that's horizontal to the ground. No, that's not going to be the best thing.
That's right. And when once you make the adjustments, you're listening to your confidence monitor that you've got hooked up to your to the spare receiver that you've got out there in the field with you, and you've got everything sounding real good. Then you go ahead and lube and secure the hardware, secure the dish. Take your Sharpie marker and make sure that you mark where the settings are, just so that if somebody decides to come out and mess around with it, you've got at least a kind of a ballpark starting place to get things back to where they are. Go ahead and reconnect the coax to the studio and the L&B power. Coaxes. What's wrong with these?
What's wrong with that cable tie?
Yeah. Well, why don't we want to use these?
I hate to be discriminatory, but it's white. It's the wrong color.
Here we go. The black ones are not going to be subjected to as much of a problem with, let me get it up here so you can see. There we go.
Yes,
to the ultraviolet radiation from the sun, and the white ones will disintegrate. What you put up there, they're going to fall apart. So, don't go that route. However, I found something else out that was kind of neat, and I don't know if you've used Wraplock. This is a stainless steel. It's the website is www.wraplock.com, and it's a stainless steel tie wrap material that wraps around and conforms to almost anything. And what it does is gives you the ability to clamp coaxes or secure wiring or whatever you've got outside, but because it's stainless steel, it's not going to rust, and it's going to last a long, long time.
Yeah. Isn't that the stuff that's got a little tool that almost like used to open a sardine can with? This is for closing the sardine can.
Exactly. It's like a little ratchet.
Yep.
The kit includes 100 feet of the wrap lock, 100 buckles, and then this wrench tightening tool, and it comes from a quarter inch up to 3/4 inch in thicknesses. So, it's something that you might want to consider, because you'll find a lot of uses around the radio station for that.
Yeah, that's the thing coming off.
Just be careful.
Use
caution
yourself?
When you're using that. Use caution when you're using that on coax.
I've seen
people tighten it down, and what happens is, remember, if you're running coax vertically or horizontally on a structure, that structure moves around. The cable will expand or contract, so to speak, very minutely. That cable wrap can cut into the jacket. What I usually have done in the past is take some rubber tape. Remember that? Rubber tape. Wrap it around the spot where you want to put the wrap lock.
Yeah.
And that becomes like a bushing, or like a washer. And that'll help.
Yeah.
It'll still stay firm, but you're less chance of cutting into the jacket and creating any kind of moisture leaching on the cable itself. And also, with satellite pointing, I'd suggest looking into renting the satellite scout, or whatever they call it, where the newer boxes, you can rent these. You plug it into your L&B, and it has in it built in what the neighborhood or the spectrum should look like for the satellite you're trying to tune into. So you can match it up and go, okay, I'm close, or I'm right in there where I should be. A little easier than trying to point to a landmark. Also, you need to remember and look this up now. Now is the time to look it up. Go to the website for SES and for AMC-18. You need to know the center of the box, period. You need to know when the center of the box is happening, and that's when you should re-peak or retweak your antenna, the antenna dish, if you've already moved it, and time to re-peak it. Now you may say, center of the box, what the devil are you talking about? Satellites, even though we may think in our imagination they sit in a stationary point above the Earth, they don't. They actually do about in a figure eight. It could be upwards of, I think it's 100 miles wide or 120 miles wide. So if you're watching this, I'm doing my index finger and thumb in a figure eight. Okay, and then right where the two lines cross over in that eight is the center of the box. The center of the box is not 2 feet, not 3 feet. It's several miles in size. That's where the maximum signal strength will be. Picture your... Think of it like a flashlight in the distance, and someone points it directly at you, and you see the focus beam and the brightness. Then they move it just a little bit, maybe an eighth of an inch or a half an inch. What happens? You didn't move. They moved it, and now the intensity dropped. Same things happens with radio signals. And think of the distance you're trying to receive that little signal on that dish. That distance is enough to create havoc on your digital receiver. So after you've got yourself in the ballpark, find out the center of the box, which you can go to their websites. SES has it all of their spacecraft. And make sure you tweak it up, because trust me, when the leaves come back and the trees are growing and the vegetation's around and you're not centered, you'll probably notice hits, spits, sounds on your signal, and you'll call the network and scream at them and say, there's something wrong with the program. And they'll be like, no, we're doing just fine. Did you peak your dish? It's center of the box time. Just saying.
Uh-huh.
God knows.
Good advice. Hey, yes, John, go ahead.
What I was going to say, Chris and Kirk, take a look at this. What do you know about putting silicone spray on the dish itself to help snow ice coming out?
That works.
I just found this out with a snowstorm last week. You know, it's one of these things you go, gosh, why didn't I think of this? It works great on a snow shovel. Man, we had a real wet, sticky snow, and it was sticking to the shovel, and it was just such a pain to get through there. Same thing with the snowblower. It was clogging the snowblower because it was so wet. And spritz the silicone spray in there, and away you go. So coating the dish surface with something like that will make your life a lot easier come wintertime.
I made a big mistake, though. I was hoping to keep the snow off my tires and put some silicone spray on the tires. That didn't help. That wouldn't help. No.
Hey, I've got something else for you guys.
Well, hold it. We got to take a quick break and then come right back with it. And by the way, along those same lines, I do have for all radio stations north of the Mason-Dixon line, I have the essential accessory that you will need for your dish after you repoint it. So that's coming up. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech, episode 343. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin and John Bissett, the author of the column called Workbench in Radio World. Every issue is with us as well. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Broadcast Supply Worldwide. And they are, by the way, if you missed the microphone specials, sorry, they're gone now. We told you all about it last month. April is their virtual roadshow month. And before and after NAB, they're on the road. Some of the salespeople from BSW on the road taking equipment to various events all over the place. And in case one's not coming next to you, here are some highlights. Here are some great prices available from Broadcast Supply Worldwide. There's the Wheatstone Air Aura X1 processor. You get $2,000 off the list price. That's exclusive pricing only from BSW. Also, the HDV Mixer. This is video for radio. It's a BSW exclusive product. It brings video to radio in the easiest, most intuitive solution yet offered. That's called the HDV Mixer. By the way, you can check these specials out. The webpage that you see on the screen there, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Also on sale during the virtual roadshow in April, the Comrex BrickLink 2, a dual package. You get two Comrex BrickLink 2s with a Middle Atlantic rack shelf. All of that, two of these for under $3,000, just $29.99. Finally, you need to check your modulation every now and then, right? How many stations? Well, we'll just share the modulation monitor. Well, the Inovonics 531N mod monitor is $300 off, and you can get this yourself. Just use the promo code ROAD, R-O-A-D in all caps, when you check out at bswusa.com. Jot that down so you don't forget it, because you want to have that coupon you make yourself, that promo code right there with you, ROAD, R-O-A-D, as in road show, at bswusa.com when you order the Inovonics 531N mod monitor. $300 off. Hey, that's worth writing something down. Or, yeah, you can give them a call. Due to their minimum advertised pricing policy, they cannot advertise the minimum advertised price, but they can talk about it. They can talk about that discount. Just give them a call. $300 off. Check that out. Of course, BSW is going to be at the NAB show in the North Hall, booth number 8106. Lots of new gear from Ultimate Ears, Oralex, much more. $5,000 in prizes being given away. There's no reason not to stop by and see them at the NAB. And if you can't be there, see one of their roadshow locations. And if you can't do that, hey, the website is full of good deals, and we'll put the link to that page you see on the screen in the show notes. You can check that out. All right. BSWUSA.com. They have amazing shipping possibilities because their warehouse in Ohio is located right next to an airport. So they can put stuff on the UPS plane. Bam. Last minute. Off it goes. You can order as late as 7 p.m. Eastern time. And if it's in the warehouse, which most everything they have is, then you can have it next day if you need it next day. They ship out of there late. Though their warehouse is open until like 9 p.m. Eastern time. Packing those last minute orders up and sending them out. As far as I know, they're consulting with Santa Claus too, because they really know how to get stuff. They know how to get stuff out the door. All right. Thanks, BSWUSA.com, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, John, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. You're talking about Santa Claus. This is what you want to get.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to hit one more thing on the satellite dish. Let me tell you the accessory that you need. Most of my stations are in the South, right? And so snow collection on dishes is not a big problem. We did have a big snowstorm years ago in Mississippi, and we had a dish, still do, have a dish pointed at AMC 8, and we did get enough snow collection and ice collection on there to cause a problem. I went and rented one of those barn heaters. It looks like a jet engine, and it burns kerosene. And I rented one of those, put it outside, aimed it at the dish, and within a couple hours, it got warm enough to get the ice to slide off. But in addition to the silicone spray, and that's a great idea, get a broom. Just get a broom and keep it nearby, because you're going to need something to get that snow out of the dish. Even if you're in the near South, if it snows a little bit, when the dish was pointed to AMC 8, snow wasn't a problem because the dish is, like this, and most of it would slide out. But come June, your dish is going to be pointed like this, and you're going to have snow collection in that baby. So keep the broom handy. All right, John, I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, listen, not a problem. That brings up a good point, though, before we get to this headband flashlight. Talking about the getting the snow out of the dishes, when I was doing contract work, I got called to a station. They had lost their signal. I went out there. It was a mesh dish. And the general manager had taken a broom, and he used the handle end of the broom and bashed the living daylights out of the whole mesh dish.
Oh, and no! So,
forget about sweeping it out. He wanted to break it up and from the back of the dish. So, just little things like that. But, that's something the engineer should either qualify somebody else to be able to do. Don't just leave it up to the staff unless they want to replace the dish. So John, crazy stuff.
John, what's this contraption on your head? Are you taking up a new profession? Is coal mining coming back?
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got one too. Open up. Open up wide, Kirk. We'll take a look. It's got there we go. Get it out.
Oh, gee.
It does three ways of lights. And then if you're ever in a situation with guys bothering you or something like that, you can switch it to the strobe mode. This is a Boruit headlamp. Boruit. It's $25 on Amazon. There's several different versions. Make sure you get one with batteries. They come with a charger that is already with the unit, but this one did not have any batteries with it, and I ended up having to buy the battery separately. I wasn't paying enough attention to it that there was just the lamp itself. But it's, as you get older, you need a little bit more light, and this thing throws LED light out like you would not believe.
A lot of engineers have these. This one came from Home Depot, and it was about the same money. It was 18, 19, 20 bucks, maybe 25. And I've had this for years, and I love it. And you're right. So many, I'm kind of old too, and it's nice to have some extra light on the subject. And look how bright that sucker is. In fact, I use this thing probably two or three times a month. I'm trying to fix something and it's a little bit dark. I'm pulling cables and wires through my house, pulling another wire into the office, or just getting under the desk here to find out that's where this goes. And I think I used it just this past week to rewire some RG6 to get over the air television. Back to some of my TV sets. So great advice. Love it.
And, nice. And Kirk, you mentioned you got that at Home Depot. If you have some time, take a walk through Lowe's or Home Depot, you will be amazed at the stuff that they've got there now. I mean, it changes, it seems like every 3 or 4 months, but it's really a neat supply for engineers for all kinds of specialized tools and gadgets that we need in our day-to-day work.
Chris Tobin, you were saying something?
Oh, no, I'm just you guys, the bright lights are too much for me.
Very good, Chris.
I haven't looked inside. This one is an Energizer brand, so it's I guess made somebody licensed it or it really is made by the battery company. But look how smart this is. So the back is two clips. Pop it off. I mean, it's not gonna slide out by itself, but it's held captive with this little ribbon, plastic ribbon. And that plastic ribbon also does the thing that's so hard to do. You pull it hard, it pops the batteries out. So, the batteries lay on top of that ribbon, which we've seen that before, but that ribbon also holds, you can't lose this part. So really well engineered, this one from Energizer. So I love tools that are well thought out.
That's neat. Kirk, one last thing I wanted to chat about is the Blue ESR tester. You're probably familiar with.
I think I have a picture of it right
equivalent
here.
Equivalent series resistance. There
is,
we
is
go.
Is this it right here? Yeah.
That's the more expensive Sencor unit. This one, the Blue ESR tester, you can get online, and it's a little over $100, about $115, $118, depending on where you buy it. But this will allow you to test capacitors, electrolytic capacitors, with them in the circuit. So. If you've got equipment, you're not sure why it's acting flaky. You and I were talking earlier, shotgun those caps. But if you want to make absolutely sure that you've got bad capacitors, go ahead and check them with this ESR tester.
Good idea. And you were telling me that you can actually, they have ESR testers. You could actually leave the cap in the circuit for testing. And boy, that's new information to me. How does that work?
Yeah. It's a boy, I don't know, but they are able to make this work, and it will give you the ability to check the capacitor before it blows or before you have a complete failure with it. And one of the things I found kind of interesting in doing some research on this is that high-frequency circuits are most affected by the increased resistance in the capacitor. And what this is, as the electrolytic in the capacitor, the electrolytic fluid dries, it causes the ESR to start to increase. So you were talking about shotgunning some of the capacitors on ITC tape machines, right?
Yeah, years ago, yeah.
Yeah, same thing there. If you're having problems, any kind of bizarre things going on, check those capacitors first. Electrolytics won't last forever.
No kidding. And that's in so many things, too. We often think about transmitters and studio gear and the stuff that we deal with as broadcasters, but we also deal with things like air conditioners, and they have starting motors. So those dry out as well. Run capacitors, start capacitors.
Starting caps, right.
Yeah.
And those are electrolytics as well.
You might be able to avoid an expensive service call. And in fact, let's talk about service calls. Chris, you jump in too. I was looking at your article, John, from September of last year, and this article about keeping cottonwood seeds and all the fluff that comes with them out of your air conditioner units. And man, you get that kind of stuff on here. I mean, hold it down a little bit. You get that kind of coverage on an outdoor air conditioner unit, and holy cow, you don't have an air conditioner anymore.
Well, absolutely, and it'll end up burning up the compressor. I mean, you can really cause some problems with that, and we don't have that problem up north here, but down where you are, it can really get to be a clogging mess where on a weekly basis you're cleaning it out. And the company that was mentioned in the article, and all of this is archived, by the way, at RadioWorld.com, select columns, and then Workbench. But all of that information is there, past issues. And that company provides a filter that will suck all that stuff up and make you be able to remove it very easily without it impacting the operation of the air conditioning system.
Let's think about some other things, because it's just time to start turning on the air conditioners in a lot of places. We've had ours on several days here in Nashville. And, of course, some transmitter sites, if they're closed systems, maybe your air conditioner runs almost all year long. But what are some more things we need to think about? My checklist starts with cleaning the outdoor unit, getting the debris out of the coils, as we call them. But we know there's lots of little fins in there, too. You want unimpeded airflow there. Another good thing would be to open it up and look at the motor start capacitor and at least order one that's the same size, the same kind, the same rating, so you have it on hand if you need it. And if it's already been a few years, maybe you just go ahead and, you know, proactively replace it, because you don't need to be off the air for that. Also, on my own list, I've got two outdoor air conditioner units here at the house. And one of them, a service company replaced the main blower in the outdoor unit, you know, to suck air through it. And they replaced it with one that the fan really wasn't balanced. And so it was sitting there vibrating the whole time. And I thought, this just can't be right. And the original service guy said, oh, they do that. You know, they shouldn't do that. So I called the, it's a very reputable firm here in Nashville. I called them back and said, listen, this just isn't right. I need an A-level service guy to come out here and look at this. If I need to pay for it, okay. If you need to pay for it, even better, but it's not right. And so they came out and they said, Mr. Harnack, you're right. It's not right. It should not sit here and go vibrate like that. They put, they said, we got to order the blade. And they, same motor, they put just put a new blade on it, new fan blades. And it runs like a Mercedes on glass now. It's just
zoom. Oh my gosh!
And so I mean, I couldn't believe. I don't think that motor is going to last a couple of years the way it was. So look for vibration, look for dirt, and get rid of it. And you know the capacitors are going to dry out. That's my outdoor checklist. Of course, look for all, you know, frayed connections and make sure the circuit breaker or fuse box is closed up and there's no bees in it. Put a mothball in there and close it up if you want. Bees will stay out.
There you go.
How about you? How about you?
Kirk, you bring up a good point though too about the cap, having the spare cap on hand for the motor. $275 is what it cost an engineer recently. He was too busy and he called a service company. They came out one capacitor, $275. And you know what is he going to do? I mean, you know, it had to be turned on, but you could have gone ahead and picked the thing up probably for $7 or $8, and you know, the markup is just unbelievable. So, and that's the sort of thing, when you do that, you need to tell your general manager, I just saved you $300, or I just saved you this much money. And you know, let him see your worth and how you are caring for the radio station or the TV station, making sure that the things that are going wrong, that you're being proactive to prevent off-air time and make sure that things are reliable.
Uh-huh. Hey, maybe you guys know, and Chris, maybe you know the answer to this question, or John. Some years ago, okay, for years I ran a contract engineering firm, and I had a business account with Grainger. Now, there's Grainger offices in either all across America or close to it, and you can get these things, motors and fans and capacitors and things like that from Grainger. Well, when I quit the contract engineering business and I was just a private individual, one day I needed a new motor for a bathroom fan. And I called them up, and they had exactly what I needed. I looked online, placed the order, and I went to go get it. And they said, Mr. Harnack, you don't have a business license for this area, and at least not on file with us. I said, well, I don't run a business. I said, it's just me. They said, oh, well, we only sell our businesses. So, well, that put a bad taste in my mouth right there. Okay, I guess I get it. But then a few months ago, I got some kind of a email or a newsletter or something from Grainger that basically said, we sell to anybody now. Have they changed their business model? Will Grainger sell to anybody that walks in off the street? You know?
Well, I don't know for sure. Go ahead, Chris.
Those businesses, a lot of them are like, they're wholesalers. That's why they sell to businesses. There's no local taxing. It's a different process. So they probably changed their business license so they could do local retail. It's it's a standard. It's nothing new. It's been around. Gray Bar was the same way. Gray Bar would only sell to, I think, consumers or retail, as it was known. I think if you did it online or through some other mail order, and then they allowed walk-ins. And McMaster Car, I think, is the same way now. But usually, a lot of those places, it's because of the tax structure. That's what it is.
Sure.
What they call resale certificates and things of that nature. That's what that comes from. But speaking of our maintenance and stuff, mm-hmm. I'm of the mindset that if I'm going to check on my air conditioning, I'll have a service company come in and take a look-see. But what you should do is have them – give them a checklist. So these two meters here and this little glass eye in the center – this tells them the high and low pressure of your system to see if everything's proper. Now, why would you want to bother with this thing? This here will tell you right away if you've got a systems leak, because an air conditioning system is airtight or fluid tight. It shouldn't be low pressure, high pressure. Everything should be where it's supposed to. If it's not, then you've got a problem. This is the way to find out. The way to do it is through a service person. But when you have them come out, have them do the full check. The motor start. Check if you have a economizer, which is a low cut, high top cutout, things of that sort, so the compressor doesn't overheat. It slows down the fan in colder climates when you're running air conditioning. But during the summertime, you shouldn't have to use it. Also, you could hose down your coils, put water through them to get the dirt out. Even though you think you're getting it on the front with just a quick spritz, it's not. You got to get all the way inside. Otherwise, the thermal temperatures, the thermal conditions change, and nothing. The heat exchange, heat transfer, what they call it, fluid dynamics, doesn't work properly. So with air conditioning systems, it's a complicated system. But if you have the right people, just have them check it out, and then you'd be in good shape. Sort of like with the generator, same thing. That would be the way to look at it.
Cool, John. You know, Kirk, something.
I was going to say one thing that will come in real handy: T-shirts. Make sure you bring T-shirts or coffee cups or whatever kind of swag you've got from the radio station and give it to the service people. They will treat you like gold because no one else does that.
You are right. Yes.
And, or buy them lunch, buy them a pizza lunch or something like that. But just think of it. I mean, these guys see probably in a week 100 different people. Nobody thinks about them. And if you show a little bit of effort, and I've done this with the phone company. I mean, it's fantastic. They'll I forgot that butt set that was there. Well, yeah, it's all right. I don't know. You can keep it if you'd like. Or the coil of wire or whatever. I mean, these guys are very, very appreciative of people that are appreciating them. So keep that in mind. Stash a couple of T-shirts in the trunk of your car and, make sure that you drop them off to the folks when they come to service your gear.
That is so true. And hey, remember back in the day, we could actually give people things like concert tickets, but those days are kind of gone.
Absolutely.
and we used to be able to give them album, records, cut corner records that the station had.
Very good.
Promotional copies. But yeah, t-shirts and coffee mugs, good idea. One time I got a much better ISDN bit error rate test because I saw what his habit was, and I ran down to the convenience store, and I got him several packs of his favorite cigarettes, and he was just delighted. Wasn't good for him, but he got the BERT testing done better.
Absolutely, and it was good for you. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's just common courtesy of helping these guys out. They've got a rough job to do, and you're there to help them make it a little bit easier. They'll really appreciate that.
Gotcha. Hey, you are listening to or watching This Week in Radio Tech, my favorite show. It's my favorite podcast. Why don't you tell your friends about This Week in Radio Tech? Coming up on some upcoming shows, we're doing two shows from Las Vegas. Chris is joining me for a show from the Public Radio Engineering Conference or somewhere, wherever we can get some bandwidth. And then Thursday, the last day of the NAB show itself, we're doing our show from the Telus Alliance booth. On the show floor in the North Hall, and we have I got a whole slew of headsets over here, courtesy of the folks at BSW. They loaned me some headsets for doing the show, so we'll pack all this gear out there and do us a live remote. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by my friends at Lavo. Now, most of you know me as a broadcast engineer, maybe an on-air guy, the host of this show. What you don't know, or you may not know, is that I've had for 5 years got the chance to travel the world internationally with folks at Telus, and I got to look all over the world. Seen a lot of broadcasting, a lot of different countries, and a lot of pretty imaginative ways that people are conducting broadcasting, the way they build studios, what consoles they choose, what audio processors, what ancillary equipment that they choose. And I've been in a lot of TV trucks as well, plus some big venues, like where they have symphony concerts and operas and incredible stage shows. And that's the reason I'm excited to introduce you to our sponsor, Lavo. Now, they're spelled L-A-W-O, and the website is lavo.com, L-A-W-O.com. It's a German company. Now, they're famous around the world for television, audio, and video, especially for those high-profile events like the Olympics, the Grammy Awards, World Cup Soccer. When the broadcast is mission critical, you are very likely to find a Lavo console there. It's built really well, over-engineered, lots of redundancy. There's no do-overs in live event broadcasting. And dead air, well, it can kill your career. Now, you may be thinking, why should I care about that? I'm not doing TV or big live events or the Olympics. Well, you know, we radio guys hate dead air even more than TV guys because audio is all we got. And that's why broadcasters like the BBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC, and NPR, to name a few, buy Lavo radio consoles. That's right. They take their engineering expertise in television consoles and live event consoles and put that into radio consoles. So when you're involved in this in TV and radio broadcasting around the world, Lavo not only thinks about what they're doing now, but they're thinking a lot about the future. And all types of media, you know, are converging into a common IP delivery platform. And Lavo is ready for that. They're going to be showing more of this at the NAB show, so you want to check that out. They have developed systems that can handle audio, video, and control of every studio device using a single integrated commercial off-the-shelf computer network. And after that, well, you know, Lavo's thinking a lot about virtualization, broadcasting from the cloud, and they're building those tools right now. You can see some early versions of that at the NAB show as well. So if absolute bulletproof reliability, five nines of uptime, and then this ideas for the future, right? All IP and broadcasting from the cloud. Check out, if that's interesting to you, check out Lavo. Now, here's a special website. If you're going to go visit Lavo, please add six more characters to it. Go to lavo.com/twert and give us a little bit of credit for letting you know about their ideas. Lavo, lavo.com/twert. I really appreciate it if you add that slash twert on there and let them know that that's how you got there. All right. Thanks to Lavo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We're going to be talking about a new product that they have coming out at the NAB show, but we'll talk about that in a future episode. All right, guys, we're about out of time. Let's make it quick. We need a tip of the week. Now, I know that I can count on John Bissett to give me a tip of the week because it's kind of what he does. So, John, give our listeners a tip to walk away from and go, that's a great idea.
Here we go. If you have not gotten the Telos Alliance notebook, you've got to contact either Jim Armstrong, my associate on the East, or myself, or at the NAB. Make sure that you show up and get one of these. Not only is there a little catalog in the front with some catalog pages, but the best part of this is the graph paper. There's a whole notebook full of graph paper for notes. You can put that EBNO number and the AGC number from your satellite dish in there. It's a really great way to record the important things that you need to keep around the radio station. So that would be my tip. How about you, Kirk?
That's a good tip. Actually, Chris Tobin, you got something for us as well, a tip you usually do.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have the official Telos brand Sharpie or the notebook.
Imagine that. John does.
We'll correct that.
I have a Digigram notebook, but I guess that's not the same. No, my trusty duck here can tell us all about that. My tip would be, and I have to say that recently there was a power outage at the facility, and we were on generator for 18 hours, which was good. I was actually out of the area doing some family stuff, and we actually continued to operate without a hitch. I mean, the only difference was that a couple of lights in the hallway were out, and everything ran fine. All the systems were up and running, and we switched back to utility power. Again, nobody even realized we were on generator for 18 hours. And I want to say that's a result of preventive maintenance and doing regular checks on your system. So I'm going to say the tip of the week for this week is check your generators if you do use them. Check your UPS systems if you have them. Check your air conditioning systems and make sure the ductwork and all the external stuff is proper. And then also check to make sure that if you do have utility protection, generator or UPSs, make sure your mission critical gear is plugged into that stuff. You know, if you have orange outlets in your facility and you have mission critical equipment plugged into the brown or black outlet, you might want to move it over to the orange. Things of that nature. I mean, it sounds simple and second, you know, it's like second nature to most. I can tell you I've been in many a facility and darkness ensues from a power outage and people are like, okay, we didn't realize the transmitter wasn't on the generator. Or the best one I had was many years ago, the generator kicks on and all of a sudden shuts down from overheating. And everyone's like, how did the generator overheat? That doesn't make sense. Well, it turns out that the duct, the intake air duct fins, the louvers, the motorized mechanism for the louver opening was on the utility power side.
So
apparently when they did the test, they didn't realize that when the louvers were opening, it was because the power was coming from the utility.
Yes, and it was the still sensor, on the relay, during the test,
right, yeah. Of course, the relay and sensor, when the generator kicked in, the airflow switch tells the louvers to open. Everyone's like, hey, it works. Yeah, the power source was on the utility side. So, of course, needless to say, a nice little wooden dowel was used to prop open those louvers, and the generator came back online and ran for about 22 hours, I think. Yeah, it was almost a day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, I repeat myself often, and every couple of episodes I keep saying about preventive maintenance, make sure you check things. It's the obvious stuff we overlook. It's the obvious stuff, and that's what it was. I kid you not, it was the funniest thing. We're all standing going, overheat. I mean, all the lights are lit up. It's like crazy beeping and sun alerts going off. I'm like, wait a minute, how can this be? Yeah, the louver.
I'm afraid I've made equally boneheaded decisions myself or mistakes, but good to check for that. That is really good. All right. I got one quick little tip. I just want to give you a little preview, a little tease of something coming up. I'm not a big book reader. I read a lot of articles online and in magazines. I read John Bissett's Workbench column, but I'm not a big book reader. But last October, Mark Persons, who's been a guest on the show, gave me a copy of this book, Where Have All the Broadcasters Gone?, written by his father, Charles B. Persons. That's a picture of Charles B. Persons early in his broadcasting career. Here's a picture of Charles B. Persons late in his broadcasting career. And, you know, he wrote this book, and I'm just fascinated by it. I read the whole book through. I read it on vacation when I went on vacation earlier. Actually, it was around Christmas time. And I just loved it. Loved the book. Well, there's not many copies of this book left. I don't think you can find it for sale anywhere. Mark Persons has a few copies. But I said, Mark, I want to read this book for you, and I want to make an audio copy available. And my understanding is that Mark is going to make that audio book available at no charge for download. And so I am working on that right now. Got a few chapters recorded, got a few more to go. And so around NAB time, you should be able to download all 11 chapters of that book. It's probably about a 10-hour listen. Of course, you can listen to it in chunks, as often or as little as you want. And I've just found it fascinating. Charles Persons has a wonderful way of telling a story, making us understand what broadcasting was like back in the 1920s when you had to make everything except the tubes. You could buy the tubes, but everything else you had to make. And he brought us up into current day, and he was a pilot. But he also, gets personal with, good and bad times. And even he gets into, during the Depression and, some neighbors starved to death. It was bad. But there's good times, too. So anyway, I'm looking forward to finishing reading it. And I'm looking forward to you and our audience getting to enjoy it and at no cost. It's going to be a free download. All right. All right, that's all of it. We're having another show next week, and coming up in a few weeks from now, the famous Joe Cipriano, a famous voiceover artist, tonight on The Simpsons. Yeah, him. He's going to be on our show coming up in a few weeks after NAB. So all that's coming up. John Bissett, thank you for being with us. I appreciate you taking your time out. Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I hope to see you soon.
We'll see you at NAB, and Chris Tobin, I'll see you before NAB, right?
Yes, Public Radio Engineering Conference, PREC.
All right, good deal. And so thanks a lot to you guys, also to Suncast, our producer, and to Andrew Zarian, founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find lots of other fine podcasts. Check them out. Tell your friends about This Week in Radio Tech. Remember our website, thisweekinradiotech.com, where you'll find all the back episodes linked there on the website. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.